Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I am Lara on WNYC. Did you know that the New York City Council will have 13 new members come January? That's a quarter of the council. After the election, four members will be openly gay, the most ever, and for the first time, the majority will be Black, Hispanic, or Asian. We're inviting each of the new city council members, as well as some of the other newly elected officials in our region, on the show to introduce and, in some cases, reintroduce themselves and what they plan to do in their new positions. We have the new Westchester County Executive, Republican Rob Astorino, on the show on Friday. And today we're joined by Brad Lander, Democrat representing the 39th City Council District, which includes Carroll Gardens, Kensington, Park Slope, and Windsor Terrace in Brooklyn. He's been on the show a number of times in the past as executive director of the Pratt Center and the Fifth Avenue Committee, where he's worked mainly on development issues around the city and has advocated tirelessly for more affordable housing and community planning. So, Brad Lander, welcome back to WNYC in your new role. Congratulations on being elected to office.
Thank you so much, and thanks so much for inviting me.
And you've been working on housing and development for over 10 years. Do you think the biggest issues going forward for the City Council will have to do with development in the city, tenants' rights, community planning, zoning, foreclosure, or will it be something else?
Well, those are going to be critical issues in the years to come. Obviously, we've got a fiscal crisis that we're facing and how to balance the city's budget and keep city services strong, make sure we can keep our schools strong and our streets safe, even while dealing with the economic crisis is going to obviously be sort of job one. But those basic neighborhood quality of life issues, making sure that our neighborhoods are great places for people to live, that the housing's affordable, that we address some of the sustainability issues that are coming, I think are also going to be a really big deal. And I do think part of the way people voted in this election does reflect wanting to see those development and land use and planning decisions go differently and to make sure the city really stays affordable and that our neighborhoods stay livable.
On the jobs front, with unemployment in the city over 10%, what's your primary agenda? You've said that you want to reform the Economic Development Corporation. How so?
Well, partly the economy is reforming the Economic Development Corporation. The idea of doing these big real estate mega projects, they just don't make sense in the same way that they may have in the past. But there are a lot of opportunities to do somewhat either smaller scale or more neighborhood-focused projects, just two examples. And ones I think that there's real interest in the administration and the council on. One is to get more supermarkets located in neighborhoods around the city. We have so many neighborhoods that don't have just decent supermarkets. And when done right, they can offer both healthy food and good jobs for people that live there. Another example is really trying to ramp up the retrofit market to make sure that homes and buildings of all sizes get retrofit for energy efficiency. That's obviously smart from a climate point of view. It saves the building owners money in the long term, but what it does in the short term, if you put the money in that you'll save back over the long run, is to create jobs in construction, which is obviously a sector that's hard hit right now.
When you speak against big development projects, as a housing advocate, don't you want a lot more housing in New York because that eases the shortage and therefore makes it more affordable in the marketplace?
Well, it's not an either or, and I certainly have advocated for new development that included affordable housing, inclusionary zoning, which is a zoning and affordable housing tool that I push strongly for on the west side of Manhattan and in Greenpoint Williamsburg, does require that you get new development to get affordable housing. So you can get it right. You can make sure the infrastructure is in place in the neighborhood, the transit, the scale is right. We need some new development. But right now, really the key to affordable housing is going to be preservation. We're not at a moment when we're going to create lots and lots of new market rate units. It's just not realistic. We've got a big overhang of what got produced over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years. So there are some really important preservation opportunities. Stuytown is obviously the one that's big in the news. Is there an opportunity now that the Tishman Speyer deal is clearly failing to make sure that remains affordable housing? But there's another estimated 70 to 80,000 units, not quite so high-end as Stuyvesant Town, but in the same situation where they were bought for much more than they're worth. Preserving those as long-term affordable housing, strengthening the rent laws, preserving the existing affordable housing stock, that's something we really need to use this moment to do.
Do you think the Stuyvesant Town decision might actually prompt the rollback of a lot of other apartments around the city from market rate back into rent stabilization?
It's going to be hard to roll them back. What we have to do is we still have a million units under rent regulation in New York City, including this 100,000 that are at risk, especially because of the way they were purchased with too much debt. over the last couple of years. And yes,
which
this
always
ruling
means the intent of the new buyer to try to flip them into market rate.
Exactly, to put pressure on, to harass the tenants, to raise the rents, to get them out of rent control, rent stabilization through vacancy decontrol. And this court finding that if you've got a tax break from the city, this J51 tax break, you have to keep your units under rent stabilization, hopefully serves as notice to other owners in the same situation that they're not going to be able to pull those buildings out of rent stabilization. But we do need an aggressive effort from the city, because if they were purchased with more debt than can be sustained on their current rent rolls, deleveraging them, getting back to a point of where the owner wants to maintain them as regular, you know, housing. These aren't generally heavily subsidized. They're just, you know, working class or middle class housing. Getting them on the right path may take a pretty aggressive effort by the city and even some changes to state and city legislation in order to put them in place.
And we'll be doing a separate segment on that particular question more in depth on Thursday. My guest right now, City Council Member-elect Brad Lander from Brooklyn, longtime housing activist in New York, now joining the government. And before we get off that kind of thing, you've written that the city should change the rules for developers so that stalled or failed construction sites can be turned into something useful like affordable housing or community gardens instead of blighting a neighborhood. We've talked a lot about on this topic on this show. We have our own halted development map.
We built on your crowdsourcing, actually.
You
we
did.
Linked to it and asked people in our neighborhood to tell us more about some of those sites and to identify other sites.
So here are these hundreds or whatever the number is of vacant luxury condos sitting around the city at the same time that we have increasing homelessness. Can we make a match? Not necessarily putting homeless people right into vacant luxury condos, but something that uses that supply.
No, and I mean, one very poignant one of these sites in my district in Kensington is a site where a homeless vet has actually set up a shack on the site of a vacant development site. So, you know, again, it's not that that house should be made for him, but you really see this contrast. You know, what we need, the city does, it seems, need more tools, though, because taking those blighted development sites and requiring either that their owners fix them up and put them so that they're not blighting the neighborhoods, or that there's some consequence is really what's essential. Right now, especially if it's vacant land, we tax the vacant land at a very low rate, you know, because it's not earning income. And so we've got to look at some new tools. Should we create a tax policy that taxes blighting development sites higher? So that at least if you're blighting our neighborhoods, you're paying and we can do something with the resources. Should we consider the targeted use of eminent domain? We've got to look at some ways to force those sites out of their blighting conditions, out of the hands of folks who don't care about the neighborhoods around them, to make them into a community and a public asset.
And I mentioned the segment we'll be doing Thursday on these things. I should say that that will be with the Housing Preservation and Development Commissioner, Rafael Sestero, who will be coming on, and of course he succeeds Sean Donovan, who was Mayor Bloomberg's housing commissioner, who has now been tapped by President Obama to be the HUD secretary. So let's get off the housing question and on to some good old raw city council politics. And here's a question I was going to ask you anyway, but I will let Lissy in Fort Greene, who is calling in, do the honors. Lissy, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering if you think whether anyone will be running against Christine Quinn for the speaker, and if not, why not?
City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, who came in for so much criticism for supporting the term limits extension, something that you opposed.
Yes.
Will you be voting to retain Christine Quinn as speaker?
So far, she's the only one who's called me to talk about her interest in being speaker. I've read that Councilmember Charles Barron may put himself into contention, but he said himself, I think, that he doesn't expect more than his own vote. You know, I think
you think that's going to be it, Quinn and Barron.
It looks like, you know, I have not heard from anyone else, and I haven't seen anyone else, you know, rumored in the blogs. You know, I did oppose term limits. But I also think the council's got to find ways to work together and move forward. It's a tough time facing the city, and I don't know that it serves the voters well if we spend a lot of time doing insider politics in the council so much as trying to figure out how to gear up and address some of these issues that I heard about as I was knocking on doors in the neighborhood, some of the ones we've talked about affordable housing and keeping the city strong in hard times. So, you know, right now I do think it looks like she'll be reelected speaker. And I think what's most important is for the council to figure out how to get to work And address the city's budget gap, address some of these issues of livable neighborhoods, and address housing affordability.
All right, listeners, for those of you into New York City Council politics, you can use the current page on our website, that's the Brad Lander page attached to this segment, to nominate any other city council member who you might like to see as speaker. If they won't run themselves, maybe you'll have to draft them if you think Christine Quinn has been a bad leader. There certainly has been a lot of pushback against her because of the term limits thing, primarily, and to some degree her general support for Mayor Bloomberg's policies. But, you know, maybe all is forgiven and everybody says, okay, Christine Quinn, let's go forward. But if not, what city council member would you like to see as speaker? Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show.
I mean, I do think it will be important for the council in the next 4 years to push the administration on some things. And I'll give just two examples that are on right today. The city council is considering, right as we're speaking, the Kingsbridge Armory development, where the administration has chosen not to support an approach to making the retail jobs pay better. And then the council is also looking at this bill to require employers to provide paid sick days. There's more than 1 million New Yorkers that don't have a single paid sick day. So if they get sick, they have to choose between their health, their coworkers' health, their customers' health, and their jobs. And I don't know, we'll see whether the Bloomberg administration supports that. But living wage jobs for economic development projects at the Kingsbridge Armory and paid sick days are issues that I feel pretty strongly about that I think New Yorkers want to see. And that if the Bloomberg administration isn't going to be supportive of, then the council's going to have to push harder. And I think we'll do that. I'm optimistic about it.
How about the 5-minute grace period at parking meters that the mayor opposes and the council is passing overwhelmingly?
I will tell you that, you know, I talked to thousands of people during the campaign, and the feeling that there is a ticket blitz, that a strategy of balancing the budget rather than kind of more honestly dealing with revenues and expenses, but instead sending folks out, you know, sending police and officials out to do tickets, is felt throughout the district, and people really wanted to see some action on it. So I think it makes sense to give people a 5-minute grace period. I have been 2 or 3 minutes late back to my meter more times than I can count.
We're just about out of time, but is this a sign that because of the closeness of the mayoral election and the newness of the council, a quarter of the seats turning over now, that the council is going to be more oppositional to Mayor Bloomberg's policies than they have been in the past?
Well, I think there's times to work together, but I do think I hope that we'll be able to do a little more pushing. I mean, I think in some ways the 5-minute grace period, while important, is in some ways symbolic. And on these issues that I mentioned today, of real living wages and economic development policy, of community planning, of paid sick days, those are ones where I do think we have a responsibility to listen to what the voters said and to push the administration more strongly.
Brad Lander, moving from activism to government, city council member-elect from the 39th District, covering Carroll Gardens, Kensington, Park Slope, and Windsor Terrace. Thanks a lot. Good luck in government.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, ABC News congressional correspondent talks about job creation, job savings in congressional districts that don't actually exist. Stay with us.